Good evening. This is Paul Kelly, and we're with Speak Up Arkansas. Our program today has to do with the City of Little Rock's prevention, intervention, and treatment programs. These programs were actually created in the early 1990s in response to widespread juvenile crime and gang activity. The severity of the youth gang problem in Little Rock was featured in a documentary titled Gang Banging in Little Rock, and Little Rock's image was severely damaged, so something had to be done. A community group was formed to address public safety. Public hearings were held, and multiple recommendations were made for what to do. This effort became the Future Little Rock Initiative, and it was one of the most innovative and holistic approaches to public safety in the country. Recommendations included expansion of code enforcement to deal with dilapidated housing and bad housing conditions for some renters. It involved increased funding for police with an emphasis on community policing. And it established the Prevention, Intervention, and Treatment Programs, we call them PIT, with the aim of preventing juvenile crime. And it also proposed and got on a ballot a sales tax increase, raising tens of millions of dollars to improve the future of Little Rock. The Future Little Rock group strongly recommended for every increase in police funding, there would be an equal amount of money spent on prevention programs. However, this balanced approach to public safety really never made it into the final tax increase legislation. In fact, during the first several years of prevention, intervention, and treatment funding, the City of Little Rock failed to allocate the full amount of $3.25 million set aside for prevention. This novel approach to public safety was sort of outside the realm of what normal municipal operations look like and struggled to be implemented. Contracts with community programs in high-crime areas remain tied up in administrative delays and legal quandaries. Each year, there were unspent PIT funds redirected to public works projects, and there were even proposals to use unspent prevention money to pay for and maintain police helicopters. Needless to say, these programs are not a priority for the city leaders. In 1996, all this began to change. Advocates for PIT programs demanded that the city board find a solution to problems that kept these funds from being used for prevention. Also, they created a contracting mechanism to support local neighborhood nonprofits, and they were forced to reimburse the Department of Community Programs, which administers PIT funds, for the previous PIT funds that were redirected to other services, and to fully fund and expand summer youth and summer programs and youth employment programs. Within a few years, the juvenile crime rate in Little Rock decreased 75%. After doing that, these PIT programs were fulfilling the vision for the future that the citizens of Little Rock sought from the beginning. For more than 10 years, the funding level for PIT remained the same, despite the obvious success, and while the police budgets were growing significantly each year. Finally, several years ago, additional PIT funds were made available, and we are now in a time of change and growth and a very positive commitment, I think, on behalf of our leaders and the communities for these programs. I have in the studio with me today five guests, and all of them have experiences and have opinions and are here to talk about how these programs had helped them either individually and as a community to give kids opportunities that they need to reach their full potential. Dana Dossett, Director of Community Programs for the City of Little Rock, is with us. Walter Washington, who is a board member at Life Skills for Youth. Gabriel Talbert, who is a youth intervention program participant with at Better Community Development. Tiffany Pettis, who's director of the Songbird Performing Arts and Media Group, one of the programs that are funded by these funds. And also Lauren, I'm sorry, I couldn't read my pen. Lauren Flanagan, who is with the Boys and Girls Club. So thank all of you all for being here. We're going to give each of you a chance to have at least 3 to 5 minutes to talk a little bit about your experiences. And I thought I'd start with you, Dana, and kind of bring us up to date where these programs, prevention, intervention, and treatment programs are now. I know a whole lot about it, and you know I do, but I'll let you kind of talk about it.
And thank you, Paul, for allowing us to come and tell the Little Rock community what we have available to our citizens here, because we're realizing that as long as we've been here, and you outlined that, there's still so many people who have no idea that we even exist. And let me tell you how special that is. We are the only city in America, and let me say that again, we're the only city in America that has a setup quite like we do, right, with this being a Department of Community Programs. And that means we're on the same level as the police department, the fire department, all of those other departments. We're a true department. And the other thing that's important is, as you mentioned about where the money comes from, those special taxes, we're also the only city in America that has that dedicated resources that go to youth development opportunities in so many different forms. The good news is that we have $5.5 million now to do that. The bad news is that we have $5.5 million to do that, because as you mentioned, that it hasn't grown yet, but the opportunities have. And so to give you an idea of the different opportunities that have grown and what we're doing with those funds is that we have provided a new way to focus on prevention, intervention, and treatment opportunities for not just youth, but also their families as well, because we realize that we have to have a holistic approach to all of our citizens. It starts with our youngest. We serve ages 6 and above. And the only reason people ask why we don't do younger than 6 is because usually birth to 5 are handled by other services, be it government services or just other services. So we handle 6 and above, and we really focus on what can we do to help make the quality of life better for our citizens. A couple of years ago, we went through a big process called the Master Plan for Children, Youth, and Families. And what came out of that 15 to 18 month process, of which you were a part of, and we appreciate that, but it was an actual plan to where we could really look at what we were doing, whether or not it continued to be effective, and what we could do to improve. Because even though we definitely know that it had been effective, there's always room for improvement. We're in year 2, where we're about to start year 2 in 2018 of the Youth Master Plan. It is available online at www.littlerock.gov. It's available there. If you look under the Department of Community Programs, you'll see where it says Youth Master Plan. And I would definitely encourage citizens to actually read it so they know what we're doing with their taxes.
All right. I think what the most important thing that came out of that, I think, is making sure and being able to actually provide information that shows the outcomes that these programs have, because since its beginning, it's had a hard time kind of convincing folks that this is a critical part of what the city needs to offer. And you're right about it being a unique community and having that available to all these. How many folks are served by this? Do you know? I know you also have reentry programs. You have things on domestic violence. You have those kinds of things.
We serve between 12,000 and 15,000 people a year, and it's growing every day because of the way that we have tried to maximize our programs and services that we offer to the community. Easily, probably more than that. Those are the ones that I can count. It's hard to count those that might have come to a program or a project that we had, and we just, you know, don't really count them, if you will.
Right, right. All right. Well, thank you for that kind of summary of where we are. And I think next I'd like to go to Walter Washington. He has a perspective. I think first you were a parent, Walter, looking for something for your children. And then here you are, I understand now, a board member of one of the programs.
Oh, yeah, that's correct. What it is that I have three boys, my wife and I share. They just now are 10, 9, and 4. And a few years back, it was funny because what we were doing is the boys had a need for something to do during the summertime. And actually, you know, I think Coach Clark, he's one of the guys, he's always active in the neighborhood. He says, well, come check us out. And me just being who I am, I was procrastinating. And one day I said, man, it's come down to it. I got to actually find them something to do this summer. And I went over there and checked them out. I said, man, we've had you paid to come over here and check us out for a while now. So we went over and checked them out. Wife loved it. The boys loved it. We loved it. And so we got them enrolled, got them signed in. They've been involved ever since then. And then one day Coach was saying, well, you know, we also got a board. We're trying to get involvement from the parents and so forth, and we'll love your input. And I said, well, Coach, I've seen the way this program works. I've seen the great things it's doing in the community, especially with the support of the city of Little Rock and many other stakeholders in the community. You just let me know what I need to do, and I'm there for you. And so there he goes. You know, of course, when you get that call and you answer it, you got to step up to the plate, and you know, I'm thankful for that every moment. So just getting an opportunity to see the youth in action and seeing my sons in action with the program and how they've been matriculating throughout and growing up in it and being able to adapt to not only their current settings and current environment, but also how to adapt socially with other youth around other schools within the district and even those outside of the Little Rock School District. And so that gives us a great opportunity to do that, and I couldn't have been prouder.
Uh-huh. What do you think, does this affect their social skills or ability at school? Is it all of those things? And can you talk a little bit about what they sort of do or what they come home talking about most that they like about it?
Well, definitely. Well, with Life Skills for Youth, the program is pretty unique because it is a out-of-school time program. So not only is it after school, but it's whenever, like right now, today, they were in session. So whenever school is out, their goal is to make sure that their doors are open so that not only they just give them an opportunity to come there and say, hey, guys, let's have an opportunity to do physical activity and play ball or play games, but there's actually a curriculum there where they study, they deal with ATM, where A being they deal with anger management, T they deal with time management, and M they deal with money management. So those are some of the skills they work with outside of school time. Of course, when it's school time, they bring in their partnerships with some of the tutoring companies out there that can help with the math, help with the STEM, help with reading. So some of those partnerships like AR Reads and so forth, they bring those groups in so that way we have a way to build up our youth, because a predominant number of their youth, they come from families that are just not going to have either the resources or the financial backing in order to go and do it themselves. And thankfully, with programs like Life Skills for Youth LSY, it gives those families a more equitable chance at achieving those standards. And so, of course, the youth, they love it. They come home, they tell you everything fun they did, like we played basketball and so forth. But then when you go inside and you see for yourself, you get to see in the classrooms where they have teachers and staffers work with them one-on-one in small groups and more hands-on projects that allow them to bring home what they've had, bring from the schools home what they learn and to build on it and to not just sit on it and leave it at school, because a big thing about it is that they mandate that you bring home any assignment from school, and if you don't bring an assignment, well, they make sure they got work for you. And then they also mandate that you bring copies of your report cards and any other behavioral things, because the things they want to do is they want to make sure they know everything they can about each child so that they can build that child up to be a better person for not only themselves but for the community around them.
All right. Well, that's quite a an accomplishment. It's I'm sure you feel lucky to have that.
Well, we're very blessed to have it. I mean, with Coach Clark and his team there, Coach Larry Clark's the executive director at LSY. We're very blessed to have him. And then, you know, him working with that church, South City Church, with Pastor Drew Klein and others, they're not only working with the community that's currently there, but they're branching out to other members of the community, not only in Southwest, but throughout the city of Little Rock, whether it be the African-American community, the Latino community, and many others, that try to be more, to just increase the diversity in the program, as well as to cover as many youth as possible that the funding allows.
All right. All right. Well, thank you for that. We're going to hear from everybody first, and then we'll have a little more of a roundtable discussion. Tiffany, I'd like to go. I think I'm going to save the best for last. I'm going to talk about what the grown-ups are thinking, and then I want to find out what really is going on. But I know you're the director of the program, and tell us about it and kind of what your experiences have been with working with the city on this.
All right. Well, first of all, Mr. Kelly, thank you for the opportunity, and thank you, Ms. Desett, for the opportunity to come on and talk about the vision of Songbird Performing Arts Foundation. We'll just say that for short. But our organization is managed by a group of educators, and so we're all either former or current educators, teachers whose experience range range from educational policy to classroom teachers, and so we're all managed by teachers. And so Ms. Wells and Terrell and Jones, they do an awesome job of managing the program. Our first focus is literacy. So when children enter the program, they have to read or they have to spend at least an hour in language arts. As teachers, when we discovered that there were so many concerns and so many deficiencies amongst at-risk children in literacy. And reading is the doorway to understanding other subjects. So right. If I'm deficient in reading, I'm also having problems in social studies, in math. So I have to start at the foundation. And so as children come in, we're seeing as they're assessed that they're having a lot of issues in literacy. So we start there at their level, and we tutor them from where they are to get them to where they need to be. The second focus is in Southwest Little Rock, we also serve a strong and expansive Latino base. So we have ESL programs. All of our staff, they're bilingual. We have an on-site interpreter, and we offer outreach to the parents. We've had parent nights. We attend parent conferences and other resources that those parents may need. We also attend parent conferences and events with them to make sure that they're comfortable navigating through the process within the school systems. And if they need us to go and sit in on registrations, we're there for that. Now, our third arm is, of course, the performing arts component. So as a performing arts organization, our goal is to give them the full experience of performing arts. So say you want to sing, we want to put you on the stage, we want to do recorded projects. So to date, we've performed, we've held performances on every professional stage here within the city, and we just wrapped up our Christmas recital. And so within the performing arts and at-risk children, they need asset building. They need to be exposed to various forms of music, blues, jazz, classical ballet, rock and roll, rock and roll history, music theory. They need to learn how to play instruments. And so we try and introduce that to them and provide those opportunities and give them the access to the performing arts to actually present their talent or to host piano recitals where they can showcase their talents for their parents, and they can learn a lot. And so our the at-risk children, we're finding that they need access to those type of opportunities that I guess with the generation, we're seeing that a lot of forms of music and classical type forms of art are tending to die off, but we think that it's important to keep those things going as we transition from generation to generation. And so today, like within our performing arts, like we hold readers' theater forums, we hold concerts, we've opened up for artists at Riverfest, we perform all across the city, and we have recording projects. And so we try and give them that opportunity. And through the city of Little Rock, we've been able to expand and do more and to provide even more opportunities for youth across the city. And so I'm just thankful they provided us with this opportunity to reach even more. And it's truly been a blessing.
All right. What age group are you talking about?
We serve 6 to 11-year-olds.
6 to 11-year-olds.
Yes.
All right. Well, those are rising stars, aren't
yes.
they? All of them are.
Yes.
Right. And I'm very familiar with the term grade level reading, that, you know, from birth to third grade, you're learning to read, and from then on, you're reading to learn, and how important that is. So it's good that you're getting the reading part of it done at an early age and looking at that closely. So, well, that sounds wonderful. I've got a, I'm going to get back to you on some performance stuff. Gabrielle?
Yeah, how you doing? How you doing? Thanks for having me on the show, and thank all y'all for sharing your information, because I'm actually learning as I'm sitting here listening, which is very important to me, and I'm very interested in your program, so I'll be talking to you a little bit about that after this. Let's start off with, let's acknowledge the fact that none of this would be possible if it weren't for their grant and the money that was given in the early 90s. I'm a product of that on both ends, and a lot of people don't want to acknowledge that coming into the program and being a success. But I have to talk about the fact that I came out of the era of what you talked about on the documentary. I grew up in the neighborhood in the west side of Little Rock. So what I base my understanding about of how I became a success out of the YIP program at the site on Toy Street at, I call it Hoover because that's where the church is located. Right. But I saw a lot of crime growing up. I dealt with a lot of things that a lot of people try to put behind them. And I use it as my foundation to reach out and help other kids. The program that I look at and other people look at, it's two different programs. A lot of people look at it as just a site. I looked at it as a home, a family, a foundation for how I became successful in life. Because if I didn't have them around at that time, I probably wouldn't be here. There were times when we didn't eat because we didn't have food, and we went to the center and we ate. There were times when we didn't have a family foundation, and they were there. And people that didn't recognize that they were more like a brother or sister to me were right there, and we shared moments that I didn't even have with my own family. So that program helped me out as well as others. I can look back now and see people that who are no longer here or locked up and can't speak for me or anybody else, and I'm speaking for them. That was what we needed. It gave us the roots to grow, and now we're here. But where are they? They're in their situation that they ended up in, but everything leads to a road, and where you go on that road depends on how you feel in life, that you've gained something that you can use to push in that road. That was my push forward, and I'm proud to say that I came out of that program.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, that was wonderful, and I think you know, people say everybody needs to be everybody's responsible for what happens to them. But if you don't have opportunities, exactly, or all your opportunities or options are bad ones, then you've got no place to go except down road. So that was, thank you very much for that. And I'm glad to know that it's had that effect on you. And you sound like a great advocate. I'll have to get you on the air some more. So
most definitely.
All right, Lauren, you want to talk about I know you're involved with the Boys and Girls Clubs, and kind of what's been your experience?
Well, my experience at the Boys and Girls Club has taught me a lot. It taught me how to be kind to one another, take advantage of what's yours, and how to like build together with friends, like be alone together and make new friends and going out in places. I experienced my first time being on a plane with the Boys and Girls Club. What I loved about this Boys and Girls Club, I love my director, Margaret Lewis, and my coordinator, Ms. DeShondra Beeler. What we did this year, what I actually love at this Boys and Girls Club, and I did, was we donated to Heffler, center to donate animals to the people in need, like goats and all that, to help them with them. And I really love this Boys and Girls Club.
Uh-huh. Was that Heifer Project you're talking about?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Well, how long have you been in the program?
I've been in it for quite a while.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And is it close to where you live?
Yes, sir.
All right. I know that was one of the big things when they put this project together, is that we were going to go, you know, location where the folks that needed it the most were. And I know that during our talking about it again just last year, that task force, that was a critical thing to make sure that we made it available. So, wow, what a just a great group. What would you two, Gabriel, Lauren, what would you all say to other kids that might think, it's hard to get, I know that it's hard to keep, I would say 16, 17, 18 year old kids engaged in things. It's got to be cool. It's got to be, how would you convince them to take a look at this and consider becoming part of one of these programs?
Well, I would say you should take the time out to come and visit a Boys and Girls Club, and in order to honor and help yourself in being a better person. They help you with your work. You go there, you can play games, and then you have an hour. They have you to come in and study your work. They help you with your work. If you need help, they will come and help you. I will tell them they should really come to a Boys and Girls Club and see how it is.
All right.
Well, I have a very interesting approach to that. Everything is social media now, including church, which is not a shock to me. I would say we should create an app, and we should make a map to where these sites are located. We should also put the faces of who the ones that we're trying to reach out there on these apps, so that these people that are interested in coming out and being a part of it can feel like it's something that they would be compatible with. Also, you have to realize that everybody's not going to come. That's just a fact. Some people are just going to be like, man, nah, I ain't with that. That's Wayne, Lane, that's whack. That ain't what's up, all them new terms they're using, because I'm 31 now. But everybody's not going to come. And so the ones that you need to reach are the ones that are truly hurting at heart, that have a need for these type of outreach programs. That was the biggest issue when I was growing up, that everybody went, but not everybody stayed. So you would have a high amount of number of kids in the summertime, but when school started, we back to the regular number. It's the group of people that we normally have. It didn't hurt, but it didn't help, because those same people felt that summertime they could fit in, and in school time they didn't, because they didn't want to participate and do the work and all the things that required them to be a part of that program. They just wanted to have the leisure time. So you have to figure out how to add everybody in one at a time, or either all together. That's the biggest point. Then the other thing is realizing this. When you have children that are really at risk, that are like about to jump over the edge in the crime and stuff like that, you have to go through extreme measures and have people that are extreme, people that go out and reach them on that level. You can't just hire people that are just like, hi, we want you to come in and be a part of the program. You know, you'd be like, you got to send somebody out there that really been through them, be like, hey, man, what's happening? You know what I'm saying? I know where you coming from. I'm straight from where you from, or somebody that I know from over there where you from. Come holler at me. Let's get this going, and let's get you on the right path, because if you don't have people that reach on all levels, you're going to overlook some people. And then eventually they're going to fall between the cracks, and then you have the judicial system, and then you have a crime rate that is going to catch them as well.
Right. All right. All right. Well, as a parent, what would you tell parents who may not be too keen on sending their kids someplace where they don't know, or some program that they've never heard about?
Well, what I would tell parents is to definitely compare your alternatives. So are you sending a child to a program that's going to enrich them, or are you going to allow them to stay at home and allow the devil's hands to be the idle hands to be the devil's workshop? So those are the things I want parents to take into consideration, is what are your children doing when they're not having structured academic time? Do you have someone at home who can instill? And like a lot of us, you know, we grew up with a big mama or somebody that could be at the house to kind of keep that belt on our behind, so to speak, make sure we stayed in check. But unfortunately, we also have some of those latchkey kids who were in houses that, you know, there was only a single parent, and that single parent had to work round the clock. So you had older brothers or older sisters watching younger brothers and younger sisters and cousins and so forth. And so there wasn't that structured time where they can be around others and be supervised and have an opportunity to be developed into more productive citizens of our society. So as a parent, if you have access to any resource that can help your child, do everything you can to latch on that resource and connect it to your child, because without it, you're going to be worse off than you are with it.
Uh-huh. All right. Yeah, Dana.
And yes, Paul, one thing that I wanted to make sure that parents also know is that all of these programs are actually free. And that's very important. The reason why these taxes are paid is so that these programs and services can be offered free of charge. So there's no charge for all the things that we offer for the students of Little Rock to be able to participate in. And that's very important to us. So we really want to make sure that every program is filled to the brim, which isn't the case right now. But we want to make sure that everyone knows that we actually do have space in many of our programs. Some of them are filled to the brim, but we have space in most of our programs, and they are in the actual neighborhoods where they are needed the most. And you're right, that was one of the very important parts. In fact, that was goal number one of the Youth Master Plan, is to be able to use data to decide where these dollars were used or needed most. And so a lot of people sometimes think that just because it's free, then it's not quality. Well, that's actually part two. That's goal number two, is to make sure that we're increasing the program quality and the accountability. So these aren't just throwaway programs or where they're getting Kool-Aid and cookies. This, as it's been explained, is that there's real activity taking place in these programs where children and youth are really able to learn the things that they need to be successful in life. And so while we've mentioned our 6 to 11 programs, we also have 12 to 17 programs, and we also have programs that are for those who have already been in trouble. So maybe there's a parent who's thinking, well, I can't send my kid because he's already in trouble. No, we have programs and opportunities for those students as well. And then in the summertime, in addition to the programs that we have year-round, we have specialized programs that are in the summertime. So if you do have something else for your child to do during the regular year or the school year, then we have summer programs as well. And then for students who are 16 and older, we also have the Summer Youth Employment Opportunity, where we actually are teaching students to work in a real work environment, learning real work skills so they can be employed in real jobs when they finish high school and or college. All so right. And that's only scratching the surface. As you know, there are so many different opportunities that we have available with our PIT dollars, including, as you mentioned, our reentry services, which are for people returning from incarceration or are on paper in some kind of way. I mean, the list goes on. There's so many different things that we actually have available for the community. There's also a lot of things that people don't realize where our money goes. Like you say, you hear Boys and Girls Club, and people don't realize that's also funded with city dollars. So there's a lot of things where they're thinking, oh, that's that program, that's Boys and Girls Club. But Boys and Girls Club are using city dollars as well for some of their programs. So sometimes they might hear about the program and don't realize, yes, that's your tax dollars at work.
Right. Well, I want to remind listeners that you can call and ask a question. You can call us here at 501-433-0088, or for shy people who don't want to be on the phone, you can send an email to speakupar@gmail.com, and we'll take your questions or comments that way. But again, you can call us at 501-433. Here we are. We have a call. Hello, you're on the air.
Good evening. How you guys doing?
We're doing fine. Having a great time here.
And ladies as well. I think there's a lady on the air. I just want to say that these programs are worth it. And I can speak from personal experience. I grew up as a teenager in Houston, Texas, and I was involved in these summer work programs and so forth. Kids need to learn how to work. They need to learn what a work ethic is. And I got to tell you, when you're working at a city park chopping weeds in 100-degree heat in the middle of Houston, it's a great incentive to stay in school and do well. I'll hang up and listen. Keep it up. Take care.
All right. Well, thank you. That's very nice of you to say. And I, you know, that's one thing I mean, those who know me know this has been a passion mine for a long, long, long time. I cannot believe how that the general public doesn't understand how providing kids with positive opportunities during the hours from after school until their parents get home and on and in the summertime when the people are at work, how that could not have a positive impact on their lives. This is just something that it just seems hard to get policymakers and other folks to buy into. I think part of that, and I've always said, and we're trying to say, well, we can prove that this works. Well, I can tell you, as a researcher and a policy analyst, I know they work. And the effect size on programs, particularly for middle school kids, kids that are acting out in middle school, you give them something to do, something positive, an outlet for doing things and hanging out with people and an adult that is, you know, compassionate and, you know, but will, you know, they can talk to them and be with them. That it's miraculous, and I just can't get over the reluctance by people not to buy into that. Yes, Gabriel?
Some you said, I forget it. I heard it, and it made me think of something because I do that all the time. But I was just looking at a study, and the reason one of the main reasons why I know these programs are more important, they used to do these documentary studies where they would go into the urban communities and they would do a ratio of single parent homes with one or more child versus a double parent home with one or more child, and the outcome would be that they will reciprocate exactly what they saw, and most of the time end up being a single parent themselves. And so we have that starting from way back then. This was like in the 70s when they was doing this study that I saw. And it's still continuing today because now they have the welfare program that picks up the slack because they didn't have a very big base for welfare program in the early 70s. It came towards the mid and late 70s and into the 80s. And then, you know, it ended up to where it's at now. So I was thinking about why wouldn't they support these programs? And then it dawned on me, common sense, if you don't support one program, you're going to support another one. And the other one is if you don't have support on the outside, they're going to end up on the inside and they're going to be supporting an industry that's not conducive of anything that we're trying to keep going out here. So you're going to have the prison and the penitentiary, basically the same thing, in a jail system. They're going to all benefit from that. And then we're going to keep losing. And they're going to be like, well, we don't have enough money. Why? Because you keep building more jails and penitentiaries. And you're not putting into the programs that we need to prevent these things. Because the prison pipeline is full. It's not getting smaller. It's not decreasing. Nothing about it is getting smaller. It's getting bigger. And it's one of the biggest industries that's controlled by private business owners in the United States. Because outside the United States, they actually have programs where when you go to the pen, they actually help you get back on track. They have things in there that soothe your soul and get you to a point to where you can learn.
Thank you, Gabriel. You're on the air. Thank you for calling. Hello? All right. Disappeared. Okay, he'll call back, I'm sure. Or she, I don't know who it was. All right. Did you have something you wanted to finish with? I mean, I agree with you. Amen, brother, is all I can say. Yeah. And I think that people who participate and know these things know that to be true. So, yeah.
And it's something I think someone said earlier, is about really getting involved as a citizen, because what happens is a lot of things occur sometimes in the middle of the night in some of these legislative chambers, and we're not, unbeknownst to us, we have no clue it happened. So we got to be very mindful of who we elect. We have to be very mindful of our involvement in it, because a lot of times this information is out there and we turn a blind eye to it because we allow other activities to take our attention, whether it be a certain television shows or certain activities with our friends and so forth. But the biggest key here is civic engagement. And I know here at Life Skills for Youth is partnering with the Arkansas Martin Luther King Dream Commission, and thanks to the support from the Department of Human Services and other stakeholders, to host a youth summit series on Thursday, January 11th, right there at Life Skills for Youth, where they're bringing in impactful breakout presenters to speak about some of those things we just discussed today. So.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I just want to call in and say, first of all, I'm glad.
You need to turn your radio off, probably.
Okay, let me do that. Appreciate you guys coming together on this panel. This is Ron Watson. I actually own an organization called Had to Graduate, which is centered around what each one of you do. And so I just wanted to weigh in on what you guys have been talking about. Appreciate Ms. Doucette inviting me. But our youth is the greatest thing that we can invest in right now.
Right. Right. Well, thank you very much for calling, and also what the work and things that you're involved with doing in your own life for youth. And, you know, they're all our children, and that they're not everybody else's. They're all ours, and it takes a village is a trite one, but it's right on target. And thank you again for calling.
Yes, and you guys continue to push forward on this. This is much needed, and you never know who's listening.
All right, thank you very much. Yeah. Yes, Tiffany.
And also, I think it's also important as providers, we have to be very assertive about going out and recruiting and taking on unconventional methods, knocking on doors, forming partnerships. And the city really emphasizes forming partnerships with schools, with organizations, with homeless shelters to identify those students, those youth who need the services to get them into the programs to take advantage of the services that are being offered.
Absolutely, yeah, and engagement too. I was for 22 years. I was a child advocate for Arkansas Advocates, and I've been in the legislature. We got a bill passed in 2011 called the Positive Youth Development Act. It passed with only two dissenting votes in the whole House, but you know what? They didn't give us any money. It's a great bill. It's sitting there. It sets out the need for quality, how it will work. It targets. It's modeled after what Little Rock's doing, and we can't get it passed. I mean, we've had some runs at it. No, we finally got before a legislative committee last time, and that didn't work. But and heck, we were only asking for $5 million. We just wanted to get our foot in the door. But anyway. And I think parents, and that's the civic engagement part of it, we can't do it. Every time I see a candidate, I ask them, well, so what do you think about after school and summer programs? You know, you got to ask them, because if nobody's asking them, they're not thinking about it. But mm-hmm. anyway.
And that's important. That's, you know, building on what Tiffany said. One of the main things that we realized during the Youth Master Plan is that we can't do it by ourselves as a city, and we really shouldn't be expected to. It really takes every single member of the community pitching in and making a difference. It goes back to that saying of it takes a village, and it really does, because even though we have the students from after school or when they're out of school until the parents get home, there's still that time where even when the parents go to bed, you know, you've got to keep them safe from when they come home until school's back in, whenever that is. And that's a critical time, because we don't want them to end up in prison. One of the great things that we do have is a great relationship with the police chief. It just so happens that we started on the same day, so that kind of helped us build a camaraderie. And we work very closely together to see what we can do. And that has translated into a lot of the SROs, the school resource officers, instead of just arresting students, that they're actually, sometimes they'll give us a call and say, hey, is there a program that this student could participate in instead of us having to discipline him? Is there something else that we can do? So we're getting those phone calls. And then we're also getting phone calls just from officers on the street that are saying, hey, we found this student. We don't want to send them to jail for something small. Is there a program that they can be involved in? And most importantly, we have a street team now, and we have people actually on the street who come from the streets who are doing that outreach wherever they are. I mean, they're just literally walking around trying to find enclaves of students that they can talk to. And if they're not willing to go to a program just yet, they're still there. They have their phone number. We do have a lot of people who are going in and out of the Young Adult Opportunity Center on 12th Street. That's where they kind of are headquartered out of. But they're still just in every single neighborhood of the city actually trying to engage students where they are during the day when you would think that they might be in school, but they're not. So they still have someone who's a positive influence in their life, even if they're not going to a program. So there's so many different things that we're doing with these PIT dollars and really trying to focus that. But again, we can't do it by ourselves. We definitely need more community volunteers to come and say, hey, how can I get involved? And trust me, I can definitely point you to a program or opportunity or focus groups. I mean, there's just so many different things that we do on a daily basis where we really need citizen and civic involvement.
All right. Again, listeners, you can give us a call at 501-433-0088. We'd love to hear from you. Dana, give them a telephone number to call, or what do they do if they're interested in this?
Well, first of all, if they want to go ahead and look on the website, because, again, it's available on everybody's smartphone at littlerock.gov. That's one of the best places to go. And then you look up the departments and where the community programs. They can also contact us at 399-3420. Again, that's 501-399-3420. And they can also stop by, because I'm always willing. Anyone who knows me knows that I'm willing to stop and talk to anyone that comes into the office personally. And I've helped several programs become a program. So even with Songbird, Songbird started out as a summer program, and they did that such a wonderful job, and then they became a year-round program. And they also work as an enhancement program, because we have lots of different opportunities. And what an enhancement program does is provide opportunities to the other programs. And so they do that. They're real busy over there. But we have a lot of different types of programs. Let me explain, for example, some of the other things that we have. So the Mayor's Youth Council, even, that's one of our programs. And City Year, and the Scholars Recognition Programs, and even the CALS Reading Program. A lot of people have heard about the OK Program. We support that with the Little Rock Police Department. The summer playgrounds that the Little Rock Parks has, we support those. I mean, there's just a lot of places that the PIT dollars show up. People may not recognize that that's coming from our department, but those are the types of opportunities that we're trying to make sure that the only requirement that we have for you to be in one of our programs is that you be a Little Rock citizen, because it's Little Rock tax dollars. Outside of that, everything is free.
All right. Well, we've got 10 minutes left. I'd like each one of you to take a couple of minutes to talk about something. Gabriel had his, you had your hand up.
I like to say this. One of the things that I always wanted to do, and I was inspired by Charlie Bruce, they call him Cy, at the Youth Activity Center that I came out of, was to be able to go where people are grieving. For example, like if somebody were to tragically lose their life and they were a young person, I hate to hear that. It grieves my soul. I actually wanted to put a team together to where we would meet and go out and be there and speak to those people, whether it be at the wake or the funeral, because when people are vulnerable like that, they're full of anger and frustration. A voice of reasoning can always, sometimes, not all the time, because I've been there and I've seen sometimes we don't listen. But to be honest, somebody's going to listen. And if one person can be reached, you've accomplished the goal. I wanted to put a team together like that. So what I learned watching when Cy used to have to deal with us, and when we'd be angry, because we were boys, and, you know, he had girls there too, and we had incidents. So I would always put us all in the room. He'd say, "Why you mad?" "Man, I'm mad because of this." "Why you mad?" "I'm mad because of this." And the whole time we mad at each other for nothing. And so the whole process behind it, when people are in the midst of anger, somebody has to make them think and to open their eyes. That's always been my goal, is to make people think and open their eyes. That's one of the things that I think that I want to see come out of these community programs, is that somebody is always there to say, okay, I'm going to sit back and I'm going to watch. I'm gonna pick out what's wrong with you. I'm gonna pick out what's wrong with you, and I'm gonna tell you exactly why that makes absolutely no sense compared to the situation that we're in. And look at our surroundings. If everybody's mad, nobody's not gonna come out of that situation with a clear goal and a clear mind and a clear head about what's gonna have to be done to prevent this from happening again. That's what I want to see happening. That's why I say, if we can get that, I think that, honestly, we can curb a lot of crime. We're not going to put these programs out of business. We're going to get them a better agenda so that they can handle things without the threat of violence coming in or being a part of the situation or why they continue to have to be around. We want to have a peace reason and not a reason of violence.
Right. And I know professional development, those kinds of skills are something that we identified as something that was needed. Mm-hmm. Anybody else want to? Tiffany, yeah.
Yes, sir. Also, within Songbird Multimedia and Performing Arts, within our programming, we try to build assets and offer additional experiences like financial literacy, investing. We teach students how to read music. We have etiquette classes, cooking, and so we try and give them life skills to build upon. I know as part of the master plan, there's a 21st century workforce readiness, and so for 6 to 11, that's the best age to get them to start off on a foundation for teaching them responsibility and getting them to start looking at a career. So in music, in teaching them music and about the arts and about financial literacy, we also say, hey, this is financial literacy, but guess what? You can be an accountant. Right. Or you can teach music. You right. can you can support yourself very well as an educator. Uh-huh. So these are some things, these are some options that you can look into.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I remember about after school and summer programs, one of the key elements was voice and choice on behalf of the kids, that the kids have some voice and some choice in what they have. And I think that's something that is, that sounds like you're given, you know, having those choices is good. Too. Yeah.
But yeah, definitely just want to, you know, thank you all and thank you for having us on the air. But yeah, want to leave everybody with an encouragement, you know, whether it's Life Skills for Youth, City of Little Rock's Department of Programs, Songbird, Better Community Development, Boys and Girls Club. The biggest thing is we encourage everyone to give where you can, how you can, if it's whether it's through donations or it's through volunteerism. That's the biggest need right now, I know, especially with our areas. You know, we have a lot of youth, but we're short in the hands sometimes to just come in and help with those youth, whether it be the volunteers as tutors or reading or feed, or for those who say, hey, I may not have the time, but I can help with a tax-deductible contribution. And that's where I encourage everyone, where you can, give any way you can and where you can.
I just want to say thank you for bringing me out, and I really love my Boys and Girls Club. It helped me a lot this year. I really learned in being more confident in going out. Had my first Christmas play about 2 or 3 weeks ago. I really had fun. I love this Boys and Girls Club, and I enjoyed and had fun at this Boys and Girls Club.
What was your role in the play?
My role in the play was to be a dog in the Towards the Night Before Christmas, and we did Polar Express.
Ah, okay. All right, good.
And let me say this real quick, Paul, is that now is the time that if anyone knows of a program that wants to be funded by the city or by these PIT dollars, we'll be releasing our new RFQs, our request for qualifications for 2018 in January. They need anyone who's interested in partnering with the city with a program needs to contact us immediately so that they can be notified when those bids come out, because they'll be coming out in the beginning of January.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good, I'm sure, to know for folks who, there are a lot of, I know that there were all kinds of people out there who really care a lot about kids, and it is, and children. I don't like calling them kids or not goats, but, you know, it's, and the youth are, they can be a handful, but they can be a whole lot of fun, and they can waken you up and set you straight, too. So all of us need to reach out to that in our lives. It makes us all a little healthier in the long run. So I want to, next week, Speak Up Arkansas show on January 3rd will be What do our littlest learners need to be school ready? Dr. Jenny Blankenship with the Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families, Dr. Kathy Pillow Price with the Arkansas Home Visiting Network, Dr. Nikki Edge with UAMS and the Arkansas Association of Infant Mental Health, and Jackie Govan, who's with the Arkansas Head Start State Collaborative, will be guests. We invite you to listen to that, especially if you had little ones. The earlier you begin, I can tell you that if you want to have an impact on a child's life, particularly those most at risk, the earlier you start, the more effective, the more long-lasting, and the less expensive it will be to intervene and help with that. I want to thank all of you all here today for being a part of this. This is something near and dear to my heart. Again, I want to thank Dana Dossett with the Director of Community Programs, Walter Washington, board member with Life Skills for Youth, Gabriel Talbert with a former YIP, YIP participant and now advocate for what he learned and trying to get the community to do more of that. Tiffany Pettis, the director of the Sohnberg Performing Arts and Media, and Lauren Flanagan, who talked to us about the Boys and Girls Club was a starring dog in a recent play, and you're going to be famous someday, Lauren. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in, and have a good new year. We've got maybe we can straighten out all the mess that happened last year and get things going the way they should. And another amen for civic engagement. The things this, for example, city board meetings, show up during public comment, and I think on the first Tuesday of the month, so you don't have to wait till the end of the meeting, and talk about why you think the prevention, intervention, and treatment is a good idea. Talk to them about how important it is to pay attention to their youth, and then when the legislature comes into session, go visit them. There's going to be people running for office. This is the time when they listen, when they're running for office, so pay attention to who they are, and thank you again for being a part of the show, particularly those who called in, and we'll be on the radio again next week. Thank you for listening.
This is KABF in Little Rock, 88.3, the voice of the people in Central Arkansas.
We've heard the term virgin birth in connection with Christianity, but it sounds to me as if you're saying that Christians didn't originate this idea.